Come join us. Come talk to us on Facebook. It's Cody Talk. It's facebook.com/CodyTalks. And on Twitter, we're at Cody Talks. So it's pretty easy. If you hashtag it, we're following along and listening to it. You can hashtag it Cody Talks, and we'll try and reply to you during the show if it's moderately worthwhile what you have to say. The first 15 minutes of the show, we try to go through some current events that I think are relevant. The big one on the news that we've been kind of watching, got the big news center back here. He's watching the hurricane coverage. It looks like it's kind of dying down, and it's not as intense right now as everybody thought it would be. Hurricanes are a weird phenomenon to me. You know, we don't have them here. We have tornadoes, which to me are even scarier. And the weird thing about hurricanes is how much warning you get. You know, it's weird for me for a weather disaster for you to be preparing for it 8 and 9 days out. And I sometimes feel sorry for those folks on the coast. And I wonder if they like want it to happen when they do all the boarding up and the moving and then nothing happens. And then, you know, and then you get those people, you get the boy who cried wolf phenomenon going on. And then, you know, there's people that don't board it up, and that's the time that the hurricane hits. But that and the tsunami, the tsunami's dying out, right, Heath? There was a tsunami warning in Hawaii this morning. Another really weird weather phenomenon. When you see the really bad tsunami videos that you see of the huge waves coming in and absolutely nothing that you could do, that's a little bit more along the reaction time scenario of a tornado, where when it's coming, there's nothing you can do but try and get to a safe spot. So our thoughts go out to all those people affected by the tsunami and Hurricane Sandy. In an insanely selfish and spoiled brat way. In 2 weeks, my wife and I are going to the Bahamas for 4 days. And we spent a lot of time on the internet making sure that our resort wasn't blown away by Hurricane Sandy. And I guess we're hoping that no one gets hurt and there's no real damage, but we're also pretty grateful that the resort's still there. My wife and Marcy's cohort in crime at Kansas Sambler are behind the window back here. If you can see on the camera this window right here, I'm sure that there'll be odd, strange things happening because the two of them are completely out of control. The current event that I wanted to talk about besides the weather was the World Series. In 1985, there was a 3-day strike in baseball, and I was 10 years old, and it made me so mad. I didn't understand why people making that kind of money. I didn't understand. I don't need the labor union lecture. I didn't understand why people that were getting paid to play baseball would ever say, I'm not going to show up today. It didn't make any sense to me. And no kidding, it ruined Major League Baseball for me. I've never really caught the fever back. I was a Giant fan. I was a huge baseball card collector. I knew everybody on the Royals and all their stats and everything. And I remember being disgruntled by the 85 strike, and it was only a 2 or 3 day strike. Everyone talks about 94 was the big one. But I pay zero attention to baseball, until the NLCS and the ALCS start, until the league championship series starts, which obviously was last week. And now I don't have a dog in the hunt. I don't have a team that I really like, but San Francisco has just become my team. Scudero, who's this new guy that just came on their team, I love watching those guys that are dying to play the game. And Marco Scudero is a guy that you can just tell that he loves playing baseball and is dying to be out there and is giving it literally everything he has every second of it. And he's kind of, he's made me a San Francisco Giants fan. And the other, if you're watching it, and Hunter Pence, you know who Hunter Pence is? To me, he is the most unathletic, goofy professional athlete in the world. I mean, he just doesn't even look like he belongs on a minor league baseball team, let alone as a starter for a team that's looking very much like they're going to win the World Series. The guy falls over almost when he swings a strike and misses. He's the goofiest looking guy. I've kind of become infatuated with watching him because I'm convinced he's going to trip jogging out to the outfield and break an arm or something. He's so goofy looking, but baseball's back. This is a great time of year to be a sports fan, really, with college football starting to count, high school football moving into the playoffs, the NFL is starting to hash its way out, minus March Madness, which you're wrong if you don't think that's the best time of the year to be a sports fan. This is the second best time of the year to do it. I love it. You're a sports fan, Marcy. Played some college sports, right? At some school that nobody's ever heard of, right?
Right.
Where was it?
It's a little east of Manhattan.
A little east of Manhattan. Now I'm a Jayhawk fan. I think it's awesome that you played basketball there. And that's the kind of sports I love. The tradition of KU basketball, and just the whole atmosphere on that campus is what makes me a sports fan. How passionate people are, and good quality athletics. I can't get away from it. You know, my kids, it's kind of a bittersweet thing because my kids this year, for the first year, I'm not coaching my kids in anything. For the first year in the last 11 years, my kids have moved on to school sports where they, you know, they have a practice every day and a coach, and they're not playing dad coached stuff anymore. And I've really gotten into, I do some radio for high school football and started following other high school teams, which is a weird phenomenon. I do another show on Wednesdays called The Vibe Show, all about high school sports. I love athletics, the lessons learned from it, the inspirational stuff that comes out of it. The competition and the work ethic needed to be successful in it. There's great life lessons in it. And to tie it back to Marco Scudero, you're still seeing that in a guy that's making millions of dollars a year, because I know there's a lot of baseball players that are making millions of dollars a year that love the game as much as him, but he shows it and wears it on his sleeve as much as anybody that I've ever seen. And it's kind of, 27 years later, it's kind of bringing me back to loving professional baseball. I love the game of baseball. I spent a lot of time at high school baseball games in the summer and stuff. But my main current event is pondering whether or not I'm going to get engrossed in the major leagues again. Are you a major league baseball fan?
Mostly this time of year.
Yeah.
But Scudero, it was great to see him be the MVP for the NLCS, you know,
right.
A guy like that. Hunter Spence brings his, you know, the long socks and.
God, he's just the goofiest guy.
I hope he's not listening to this show.
I doubt. Well, I'm massive kudos to him, and I appreciate the fact that he's out there because he's just not the stereotypical looking professional athlete by any means. He doesn't even move like one. He moves like a big clumsy goof. His batting, you would be petrified of an 8-year-old that had that batting stance. You know, it just doesn't. Nothing's classic about it at all.
He shouldn't do a video. But he produces, which is.
Oh, absolutely. You know. And I'm not really. I'm kind of making fun of him, but I'm not really making fun of him because he does. He starts for a team that's one game away from being world champions.
And then what about Panda?
Yeah.
Who, you know, you can be out of shape a little bit.
It's funny to hear they interviewed the manager, Bochy of the Giants. They literally interviewed him about it, and he said, yeah, we have a plan to help him lose a whole bunch of weight, but we're going to wait till after the season. We're not going to mess with him right now because he's producing as well. You know, he has to hit the ball far. He's not going to be stealing bases but then again, you know, he plays third base. You got to be pretty quick on your feet. I don't know. I'm back. I'm back as a baseball fan, I think, and I never thought it would happen because I was a disgruntled 10-year-old in 1985.
I'm glad you're back. I mean, it's such a different sport than basketball, football. They're each so different.
And baseball can be, if you don't get into it and learn the ins and outs, baseball takes stats so seriously because they need something to talk about during the baseball games. You know, I mean, there's sometimes. And there's a lot of downtime, and then I would say 80% of the game is the pitcher versus the batter, you know, and everyone else, and then the catcher, but he's just holding the glove and throwing it back to the pitcher.
Hey, that's not right.
I know it's not. Catchers, you work hard. We love you. But anyway, that's it's been stuck in my brain, and I've been obsessed with it. For the longest time, I just kind of, in previous years, I would just check the stats of the World Series, you know, and see what's happening or watch it progress statistically on my phone. But I'm driving my family crazy because we're watching every game and every minute of it at my house.
And don't we have a local boy?
We do. Andy Dirks from Haven, who plays for the Tigers. He wasn't slated to start the first three games. I think he's slated to start. But he pinch hit in two of the first three games. Didn't have any real success with his pinch hitting, but yeah, Haven, Kansas, Reno County guys, pretty exciting stuff.
That's pretty neat.
He was the last, someone told me, that Haven has moved on to the playoffs in high school football for the first time in a long time. They weren't, had some rough years in the past. The last time that Haven High School went to the state playoffs, I believe this is true, a guy that is now playing in the World Series was a running back for them.
What position did he play football?
Running back.
Oh, you just said that?
I did just say running back, yeah. Did you hear me say that?
It's early, Cody.
It is early. That's the kind of time slots you get when you think you want a radio show but don't know if anybody will listen to it. It's exactly what you get. We're going to come back. Marcy has some incredibly interesting stuff that I love her passion about, I've kind of become passionate about, and we're going to dive into the details of Marcy Pinner and the Kansas Sampler Foundation after we take a quick break.
The stage of the historic Fox Theater in Hutchinson will come alive when eight of the nation's most talented young tap dancers present the musical Tap Kids at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, November 3rd. Tickets to Tap Kids can be purchased online at hutchinsonfox.com, by phone toll-free at 877-FOX-SHOW, or in person at the Fox Theater box office. Tap Kids is generously underwritten by Anima Bella Spa, Salon, and Boutique, and by Artistry. Don't miss Tap Kids, Saturday, November 3rd at the Fox Theater, part of the 2012-2013 Marquee Magic season.
KSKU. Cody
Tom. He couldn't give us much time there. Jumped all over. So Marcy Pinner is here with us today. Marcy is the, what's your title? The president, director, head honcho of the Kansas Sampler Foundation. Do you have a title? You have to think about it. This can't be the first time anyone ever asked you what your title was.
Let's just say director.
Director of the Kansas Sampler Foundation. The Kansas Sampler Foundation, here's how I'm going to lead into it. I think it's very cool that your mission is sustaining or preserving?
Preserve and sustain. Both in there.
Preserve and sustain rural culture.
Mm-hmm.
Let's back up. Give me the couple of minutes. I know it'll be hard, but give me the couple of minutes why the Kansas Sampler Foundation exists. What's the story behind it? Not the reason, but the story behind it, because it's an incredible story.
I can do that quick. I came back to Kansas in 1990, and long story, but the only job I could hold was with my dad. And we would drive around the state to do a guidebook because he had written some photo essay books, and people said, how do you get to those places? So we drove around the state, did a guidebook, and while we were out there doing a guidebook, there were two things that became obvious. One was that Kansans didn't know their own state very well, and the second was that one small town might be doing something really good, but there was no way for the next small town or small town across the state to know, you know, that same kind of success or what had been done. So we decided to form a foundation to help achieve both of those things.
To help Kansans know their state better.
Yeah.
And to help small towns achieve success in their ventures?
At a grassroots level. You know, there's the state has programs that filter down, but we do things that you can do at the grassroots level without, you know, state assistance. So
when you went around with your dad to do the initial guidebook, you went to every, what towns did you go to?
Well, that first guidebook, we went to, maybe a fifth of the towns in the state. We were just learning what it was to explore. So we, Didn't do that many, but we did a good sampling to give us the information that a foundation or some kind of organization was needed to address some of the issues. You know, with that first guidebook, we had a book signing party on the farm, a cold, snowy day, November 1990, and we invited some of the places in the book to come to the farm. And despite the snow, despite the fact that I didn't know you yet and didn't know how to market very well, 1,000 people came. And so we figured people want to know what there is to see and do in this state. And so that's a couple years after that, we became the Kansas Sampler Foundation and started doing that book signing turned into the Kansas Sampler Festival. And soon we realized we needed to grow the audience for rural, so we started the Kansas Explorers Club. You know, it was sort of like one thing led to another, and you didn't really think in advance what to do. You just sort of followed your nose.
That's exactly how I work, too, so I understand that process. Let's talk about the types of towns that the guidebook has. It. There's some criteria, right? There's some criteria for the towns that the Kansas Sampler Foundation supports and is involved with.
Well, in the early 2000s, that's the first time I went to every town in the state for the Kansas Guidebook for Explorers. And we go to the big towns too, big, small, doesn't matter. But what we're looking for are what we call explore attractions, which means that the shoe tree at Wetmore, you know, fits the bill. Not only does the Lumberyard Steakhouse in Zenda fit the bill, but the historic jail across the alley does as well.
Let's back up and talk about this. Describe the shoe tree for people that don't have any idea or know what you're talking about.
Well, mostly what I love about the shoe tree is that it's 5 miles outside of the town of Wetmore. So, you know, it's in a remote place. It's this cottonwood tree. And in the 1980s, John Kissel read a farm magazine that somebody in Indiana had done a shoe tree, which means put shoes all over a tree.
Right, and just walk up and nail shoes to it, basically.
And they put a hammer and nails right there at the base of the tree so you can, it's easy. And, anyway, so John Kissel started a shoe tree, and I've even taken a busload of explorers with extra shoes to the tree, and we've, put a ladder out there and added to the shoe tree.
You keep talking about explorers. Tell us in the Kansas Sampler Foundation's term, what is an explorer?
It's the easiest way is to say it's not quite like a tourist. In my mind, a tourist wants things laid out for them or something big like Disneyland or a mountain or an ocean, but an explorer is willing to look for the nuances or the details in a small town. They're willing to talk to the locals. You know, I think it's being engaged. It's willing to not have a brochure to tell you where to go. It's you sort of follow your nose. You look for these little things that add up from one town to the next. But not everybody can be an explorer because for some it's just a little too obscure or a little off the charts.
But those stories, I mean, to me, it's the part of it is when you go to that thing, knowing the story behind the shoe tree.
Right.
And then going to see it. I mean, even to me, it would be weird to drive out in the middle of nowhere and look at a tree that had a bunch of shoes nailed to it. When you tell me the story behind it, I'm dying to go see it now and become a part of the story. It's the culture part of it more than the tourist type attraction part of it.
Well, and you've just said it perfectly because you might not go just for the shoe tree. But if you knew that Wetmore has the Dinner Bell Cafe, and if you knew that they have the most giant hopscotch board on a sidewalk near their school in front, and you could go play hopscotch. Or you could find Bob Carson and have him open his antique car place in this old filling station. You know, it's adding these things together. It's not maybe just the shoe tree, but there's all sorts of little things like the shoe tree out in any area of the state. And like, for instance, would you go to Arma or Franklin to walk the largest sidewalk in the state between two towns?
No, I might now that I know
well,
it's there.
You might need to know more of the story, right? But that was even one of the Eight Wonders of Kansas Customs finalists, because even the Guinness Book of World Records put that sidewalk in there.
And that's the kind of stuff. I love that. I love that kind of stuff. And not so much, it seems like my favorite of the cultural things, of the Kansas sampler type things happening in Kansas, a lot of times, once someone really focuses down on making it a tourist attraction, making a business out of it as a tourist attraction, you even lose some of that sometimes. You know, when this is the guy that decided to start nailing shoes to a tree, you know, he did that for a story.
Right.
He didn't do that. You know, he doesn't charge admission for you to go nail your shoe on the tree or look at it. That's the kind of people that create these things, that create something for the sake of a story.
Right.
Does that seem right?
That is, I might have to borrow that, Cody, because that's the best way to describe this. It's not done to attract tourists. It's done, whatever the attraction is, it's usually done because someone just has a passion or they love it, or like Pelican Pete's in Junction City. It's Wendy and I kept driving up and down the main drag, and we kept seeing all this yard art. You know, someone's place is just filled with yard art, and it looked a little Hawaiian, and it just was a little over the top. And then one day we saw someone standing there with a shaved ice cone thing, and we found out it was a business. You know, you walk up to someone's house window and it's a legitimate business. But Pelican Pete's wasn't just yard art. It was, they have this passion and they sell shaved ice. And
it's let's talk a little bit about the conundrum is that they do it for a story. They don't do it for a business. So in turn, there's no real marketing dollars behind it. But to me, that's to some extent what you're solving for these folks, because even if it is just about a story, if you have a story, you want people to know about it, but it makes no sense for the guy with the shoe tree to spend a whole bunch of money telling the rest of the world that there's a shoe tree,
right?
You know? And so what it does is they rely on word of mouth, and it happens word of mouth. It becomes cool and it becomes a thing because of word of mouth. But then there's so much of the world that's missing out on it because the word of mouth doesn't spread to the entire
right.
world. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and you've got two angles going there. One, Pelican Pete's does do it to make a living. So, but you're right in the sense that a lot of these places, like the Bunker Hill Museum that promotes Mother Bickerdike, Civil War nurse, nobody even knows that's there. So these older ladies are doing this museum, and it's great to tell that story, but it's no one really knows it's there. So there's the people that do want to make a living, but it's not because they want it as a tourist attraction. So let's take, for instance, Murphy's Mercantile in the town of Stark, which I know you've heard of.
Absolutely.
It's actually near Erie, one of your favorite towns.
I have. But I've been there.
It's a town of 100, and the Murphys moved into town, and the grocery store had just gone out of business, so they decided they would put in this kind of semi-grocery store, semi-cafe, semi-general store. But they did it so cute, so it just looked trendy, you know. And in fact, after about 8 years, so many people had come there, they got burned out, and no one was really there in the town that could take it over, so that kind of a destination explorer place is closed. So that was a issue of, you know, they didn't market a lot, but they made a lot of, they did well.
Well, sure. And it's not that you can't have a monetary goal to have a place like this. It's still about the story behind it.
Right.
That makes it worth going to see. You talked about the lumberyard in Zenda, you know, you can't run a restaurant and only be at where they open once a month, once a
week? Well, they're
open
Thursday through Saturday.
Okay. But you can't run a restaurant in Zinda with the hopes of becoming rich and becoming a tycoon. I mean, they started that restaurant for the story and to make some money as well. And I don't know the backstory.
Well, they also did it for the town.
Right.
They had the Zinda telephone company there, and Beulah Graber thought, you know, this town deserves a restaurant. And the lumberyard had closed, so Beulah, who owned the Zinda telephone company, opened the restaurant. You know, it was sort of for the town. But by golly, people started coming from Wichita. How many times do you get to eat in a lumberyard?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Good steak in a lumberyard. But then there's like Chief, who's buried standing up on Fort Riley. Chief was the last horse on the cavalry rolls, and they buried him standing up in his own coffin in a big plaque. And, you know, Fort Riley doesn't need to be a tourist attraction, but that's one of those places that explorers love to go because of the story.
Absolutely. And there's one in every town.
Right.
There's a story and something to mm-hmm. see that was a part of that story in every town.
Right.
I want to talk a little bit more about the Explorers Club, but we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back on Cody Talks with Marcy Pinner.
Hi, I'm NASCAR reporter Wendy Venturini. As a correspondent for Speed Channel's TV show NASCAR Race Day, I've covered racing's greatest champions. But if I hadn't joined another organization of champions in high school, I might not have discovered my full potential. That organization is Skills USA, a partnership of students, teachers, and industry working together to ensure America has a skilled workforce. Skills USA members learn the technical skills to succeed in America's top industries. They also learn the leadership skills to succeed in life. That's the Skills USA edge that helped me reach my winner's circle. It can help you reach yours. There's no better time to be young, skilled, and a member of Skills USA. Come join the fun and get on the fast track to your career. Learn more at skillsusa.org.
Skills USA.
It was really nice of Sonic to give us these cherry limeades for half price.
Actually, all drinks are half price every day between 2 and 4 p.m.
Nice.
In fact, you could get 398,929 different drink combinations all for half price. So.
Wow, man, you're such a numbers guy. Quick, how many ice cubes do you see?
5, 10, 15, 25, 50, 56.
Sip on a classic cherry limeade at happy hour and help support public schools through Limeades for Learning. This is how you Sonic. For a limited time, only participating Sonic drive-in. See menu for details.
KSKU. Cody
Talks. All right, welcome back. It's 7:30. We're halfway through the show here on Cody Talks with Marcy Pinner from the Kansas Sampler Foundation. We've been talking about explorers. You kind of gave us the definition of an explorer in Kansas Sampler Foundation terms. It's a proper noun now with you.
It is.
Right? There's the Kansas Explorers Club. Give us the backstory on what led to there becoming a club of Kansas Explorers, as well as the ongoing story of what happens.
We had been doing a retreat for rural leaders for a couple of years, and one thing we realized was that we needed to grow the audience for these rural towns. It wasn't really for tourists. So we were sitting around a pool, maybe drinking a few adult beverages, and we came up with this concept of a club. And, you know, the people would join, and we thought, let's make it fun. Let's even have the membership fee be fun. So we came up with $18.61 as the membership fee, and we'll let your listeners figure that out.
Decipher why you do that in Kansas.
Right. And you'd get a membership card and a number, and would have a secret greeting ritual, and it would be fun. And we started that in 1995, and we've had over 6,000 people sign up to be an explorer. Mostly what we do is send out a newsletter 5 to 6 times a year to give people ideas of places to go, you know, and we tell them things. We try to create some a way of thinking too, like in the year 2000 we did our Lizard Lips campaign where every year they had to take out a $5,000 loan. It was a convenience store, grill and deli, and bait shop near a reservoir. And every year they had to take out $5,000 to pay employees in the off season. So we decided we would get 1,000 people to go there, 1,000 explorers to go there, spend $5, and that would sort of help repay the loan.
Right.
Well, not only did we get 1,000 explorers to go there, but Los Angeles Times picked it up, money from Japan. It just was this big thing. And we knew at that point that this explorer concept and making a difference was sticking. And, you know, that is what being an explorer usually we urge people to do individual or family trips, but sometimes we do group events. Like a couple of weeks ago, we had a bring-your-own lawn chair in the unincorporated town of Pickway. Everything we do goes back to the mission of the foundation. So we did this BYOLC to help the public kind of understand how people could live in an unincorporated town that when you drive by, you think, why would anyone live here? So we had people from the town talk and some of the businesses and the the explorers learned about Pickway. They sort of fell in love with Pickway. And then we all went out and spent money at the couple of stores in Pickway. We looked at the church. We all stood on the
an alarm going off in the studio. We'll let you know if we take off running.
I'm trying to act like I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. We tried to do fun things. Like we all stood on the grain scale to see how much we all weighed. Some people from the city didn't even know what the scale house is like at the co-op. So we tried to have fun. And then people ate in the local restaurant and shopped at the co-op. And the Kansas Explorers Club is about helping people understand rural, to put it, that's one definition, but to have fun doing it, to sort of fall in love with rural.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I don't want to redefine your organization, but I see it as more, even more than understanding rural, finding the fun in it, finding the things to do, in today's day and age, it seems like family vacations have become so much about packing a whole bunch of stuff and getting on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I still like to do that. But in between, or when that's not possible, there's so much just incredibly interesting stuff for every age mm-hmm. group, you know, where you may think that your kids, because they talk about wanting to go to Disney World, that they're going to be let down or they're not going to be excited. And they may not be excited. You know, the 10-year-old kid from Wichita may not be excited heading out to a town that he's never heard of to experience some of these things. But it's amazing, A, when you combine these, some of them very quirky,
mm-hmm.
some of them
yeah.
just not stereotypical attractions to go see. And then you sprinkle in the people
right.
that are there that you run into that want to tell you the story. You know, they don't want to sell you a trinket. They don't want to take your money. Not that they don't want to take your money. That's not their goal, to get money from you. They just want to sell this. They want to share this story about this unique thing that they're a part of because they live there.
Yeah, and here's a good example. More and more families are taking vacation in Kansas, all ages, but there's the Round Barn at Mullenville. And what I love about that is it's always open. You can take your kids there, and, you know, if they haven't been in a barn for a while, they can just run all around this round barn trying to find the end or go up to the hayloft. But here's the other really cool thing about this round barn is that they have a gift shop there. And, of course, nobody staffs the place. So if you want to buy something, you simply just take it and you put your money in this little jar. And
I love that kind of stuff.
It works.
I love that kind of stuff. I love small towns because of the, and you know, it's really, I say that all the time. Really, I love small town people. You know, and the reason that I love small towns is because those people are there. You know,
right.
If you, there's a lot of places that if you went and pitched this idea of a gift shop, with a, you know, you take your t-shirt and you leave your money in the jar. First of all, there's a lot of places that that would be a bad idea over in the big scheme of things. And the majority of the world would think you're absolutely crazy for having something like that. But it works in Molinville. You know, it works in small towns, and that's what I love about it. I love being involved with them. I love the stories. You know, mm-hmm. I like knowing what made someone think that they should put a gift shop in this big barn and that people would actually come to it. You know, I want to talk to that person and hear the story or read about the story or something along those lines. It's why the guidebook, is such a cool thing to me and our family and working with those communities and help them, which I work with a lot of small communities in the job that I have that actually pays me, in consulting with them, and helping them get the word out about these really unique, not so much the attractions, but the unique economic things
right.
that they have going on and programs and such. The message that I'd like for our listeners to get from this, is just go explore,
right.
And depending on where you're at, maybe just on a bicycle or maybe just in a 50 mile radius in your car, and go look for those things, that don't have a big flashing neon sign that, cause nowhere in the United States is there not this stuff, you know,
right.
even if you live in the middle of Chicago, you can drive an hour and get out somewhere where there's a really cool small town rural story happening. I wish that every state had a guidebook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're in Kansas, get a copy of the guidebook, which right now is not actually in the, is there still the guidebook is, you're
well,
making a new one.
Right. The only one in print right now is the Eight Wonders of Kansas guidebook, but that's like 216 places to get you started in the right direction. And Wendy and I are going to every town in the state right now to write the next one. But, you know, here's a good example of what you're saying, and it's baseball season, so this will fit. Have you heard of Joe Tinker? We're dating back to 1912. Tinkers to Evers to Chance. It was a famous double play combination, and Joe Tinker is from the town of Muscoda in Kansas. So the town of Muscoda, about 150 people, they had an old water tower that needed to be swapped out. And they took the tank, the top of that tank was round, and somehow they wanted to have the world's largest baseball. So they found a way with little money to take that tank down, and it's now positioned on what they call Main Street. And they've somehow put those seams of a baseball around the tank,
right.
So it's starting to look. They're going to have a door. You'll go in. It'll be a museum on the inside, and. You know, you got to be a little see things differently to think of doing that. You have to think that that's even possible to do, and the zoning regulations will let you do it.
Well, and then go forward with it.
Right.
I think there's a lot of people that I think a lot of those ideas happen. It's the person that has the guts to actually start lining up the equipment to take the water tower down, you know,
right.
it's the moving forward with it. I might have, if I lived there, thought, you know what we ought to do? We ought to make that a baseball. And then it would have died, you know, but somebody in these towns has gone forward with it and actually gone out to a tree 5 miles out of town and started nailing shoes to
mm-hmm.
it. And that's that, you know, they're explorers. They're
right.
They're adventurers. You know, they're looking to create a story. I think it always comes back to that for me, that they're looking to create a story. And sometimes that story is to make money for the area or for
mm-hmm.
themselves. But more often than not, it's just for the sake of the story. And I love the concept of doing things that are just for the sake of a story.
Well, even the explorer can create their own story. We have a lot of explorers that choose a quest. You know, like Tamara's quest might be to go hit a volleyball in every town, you know,
right.
Or people go to every winery or they buy fabric in every county. So you choose your own quest, which gets you to places that you wouldn't normally go. Larry the Bowler chose to go bowling in every county. He found out only 85 of our 105 counties had a bowling alley. But when he went to the bowling alley, he created a story. I mean, he had so many friends by the end of each, you know, he'd bowl with
So meeting the people and creating relationships. A lot of times with people that are less than 100 miles away from you, that if you don't go out and explore, you're never going to meet them. You're never going to hear their story. You're never going to form those relationships. I want to take a quick break, and then I want to talk about projects that you have going on right now and how those folks that are listening in the state of Kansas, if their interest is piqued, we'll give them a way to get involved as well. We'll be right back with more with Marcy Penner on Cody Talks.
One of the many issues that Representative Jan Pauls worked on this year was the so-called Grandparents Bill, to put grandparents first in line for a child in need of care placements. She received this note of appreciation from Wendell Turner. I want to thank you personally and on behalf of the entire membership of the Kansas Silver-Haired Legislature for the outstanding work you did to facilitate SB 262 becoming law. The skill with which you maneuvered the bill through the proverbial white water of this year's contentious legislative session was great. But in the process, you made the bill better and stronger than we requested, and certainly stronger than we could have expected without your help. To honor your outstanding achievements, the Board of Directors of the Kansas Silver-Haired Legislature voted on May 2, 2012 to name you the KSHL Legislator of the Year.
Hi, I'm Representative Jan Pauls, and your issues become my issues. I would appreciate your vote.
Paid for by Jan Pauls for State Representative Ron Pauls, Treasurer. Meet this week's Hutch Animal Shelter Pet of the Week, presented by Midwest Fort Lincoln Toyota, C2I, and RCAT. Boo has a white and tan coat with deep brown eyes. He's a six-month-old Jack Russell Terrier Beagle mix with 35 pounds of friendly, playful attitude. Boo is house-trained and gets along well with others. Boo offers years of playful, devoted companionship. To learn more about Boo, check out our Pet of the Week online at adastraradio.net.
Hit Radio 94.7 KSKU. KSKU. Cody Talks.
All right, we're back on Cody Talks with Marcy Penner from the Kansas Sampler Foundation. We've been talking about just the joys of rural Kansas specifically, but it applies to all of rural America. It's no different in Kansas. We think it's a little better because we're here, but everyone in every state should think that their state's a little better. What day to day you have all of these things that are happening, or sometimes a lot of those things. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, I'm going to drive the conversation. You have Power Up Kansas, which I think has potentially the best website address ever. It's ruralbychoice.com. It's the Power Up movement. Let's talk about the Power Up movement a little bit. What is that? Why does that exist?
Well, I love this. When I did my first journey to every town in the state, it became pretty clear that the towns that had young people involved were the towns that were doing best. So I put this small group together, and they came up with the name Power Up. And what a Power Up is someone who's 21 to 39 and rural by choice. It's sort of the rural version of the YP,
sure,
the Young Professionals. But you know, a lot of times we hear things like, if a young person, they go out in the world and they want to move back, have their family in a small town or just move back, oftentimes they're looked at as a loser. They feel like, you know, it just doesn't feel right what's coming from their friends. And yet there's a lot of young people in rural that are doing great things. The Power Up movement is about helping make it okay to be rural, to move back to rural. You're right. Rural by choice is really powerful. And we did this one conference where all of the power-ups in the audience came up to the microphone, said their name, what they do, and they ended with, "And I'm rural by choice." And it was such a strong statement. And right then and there, things started to turn a little bit. Like there were two voices going. One, we need young people in our small towns to speak up and be engaged and be active. And the other thing was, I am that age and it's okay to be in rural. And this bigger movement is about recognizing the value of the young people in rural Kansas, how to work with what I am, a power on. But the bottom line is to help sustain rural Kansas. So it's about the power-up movement is not just about the 21 to 39-year-old, but it's about focusing on them and then how we can all work together to make rural better. I need to do some wordsmithing to get it down, you know, to just a few, to one powerful sentence. But, Cody, I can tell you that as we're working on this and doing power-up meetings around the state, it's actually pretty goosebumping about what we hear and both ways. It's hard to hear what young people feel are the difficulties in small towns or maybe towns of any size, like the clubs want young blood, so they get the young person to be in the club, but then they don't want to listen to the young person. They just want you to do things the way it's always been done. And I think that's just kind of us older folks don't always think about that. And it's drawing attention to what the young person can bring, what the power up can bring to the town. That's what we're trying to get out there.
I think there's also some, from what I see on the Rural by Choice power ups, there's the it's okay to be young and rural. I think that's slowly turning into it's cool to be young in a rural or a small town environment. I mean, you have some very happy, productive, mm-hmm. creative people in these mm-hmm. environments that aren't just people that couldn't go out to the big city and make it, so they move back home to the security of mom and dad. That's not the case with, I would contend, most of these people are truly rural by choice. That's mm-hmm. where they want to be. And I think it's awesome that there's an organization to help them deal with some of the difficulties. You know, it's just like a young professionals organization mm-hmm. in a big city, where when someone moves there and needs a support structure and help with things, you know, you talk about these towns that you, Mullenville mm-hmm. isn't going to be able to put together a fully functioning young professionals organization just strictly out of a case of numbers. But if there's this statewide group of people serving that role, I love the concept. And I think it's maybe one of the best steps I've seen towards helping curb some of the population mm-hmm. Decline that we're seeing mm-hmm. in rural Kansas. We got 8 minutes. So I want to talk about other things that you have going on, as well as if folks out there are listening to this and they're intrigued, what's their step? What do they do? What should they do if they want to know more stories than just the five examples we've talked about today?
Well, go to kansassampler.org. If you're intrigued as an explorer, or if you're intrigued as a doer in a small town, and you want to know how to plug into our network and get involved, kansassampler.org will be the way to. We have Facebook pages as well, but you know, Cody, because of social networking, there's lots of things small towns can do now to get the word out or for power-ups to connect. I want to make a shameless plug that November 3, that's next Saturday, this happened at one of our power-up Big Rural Brainstorms. we decided that, you know, what can you do on a Friday night for young people, or a Saturday night in this case? They're going to meet in Peabody at the Coneberg Inn and have an open mic night. And that it, there's nothing unusual about that, but it's the word is we're trying to get the word out to power-ups or YPs all over. So on November 3, the place to meet will be in Peabody at the Coneberg Inn, and just for a night of fun and sipping and singing and doing whatever. But I do hope there's listeners out there that maybe haven't heard of the Kansas Explorers Club that would like to know their state better. You can also go to a local bookstore and or go on to 8wonders.org and purchase a 8 Wonders of Kansas guidebook. And, you know, just we're interested in you just learning about the state, whether it's armchair travel or whether it's going out there to appreciate the shoe tree or going to a local cafe and feeling good about spending some money in the cafe or the little store down the way.
And it doesn't even necessarily have to be, your motivation doesn't have to be right off the bat learning more about your state. It could just be conquering boredom on a budget, you know, because the guidebook and the KansasSampler.org website and the things that you're doing very much can do that. They can,
right.
They can conquer boredom on a budget for you in Kansas. To the extent that you'll get into the guidebook and realize, if you're in the state of Kansas listening, and even if you're not, go to KansasSampler.org, and get motivated to check some of this stuff out in your own state. You know, I mean, it's out there, but if you're in Kansas, that to me is the biggest thing I hear. So I get frustrated, for lack of a better FCC allowed word. I get frustrated with people who are constantly griping about there being nothing to do or see. And I wrote a blog post about it. I actually posted it yesterday because part you were involved in the blog post. That only bored people get bored. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you take the time to get involved in any type of a concept or project, it doesn't have to be Kansas Sampler, but this is an option. You're going to go be amazed, learn things, meet incredible people, and create your own story by getting involved with these things. That's what intrigues me so much about what you're doing is I use your guidebook and your stories and these crazy, unique, sometimes almost silly things that are out there to go see and do and be a part of. That sometimes is my motivation for mm-hmm. getting into this stuff is just, it's something to do in a place where a lot of people don't think there's anything to do because they don't take the time
right.
to get into this type of stuff.
Well, and one other thing I'd quickly say is that, we've divided the state or a town into 8 different elements. And I think, any state or any explorer, whether you're an explorer without a brochure or you're a doer in a town, think about architecture, art, commerce, cuisine, customs, geography, history, people. You know, if you say, what does your town have to offer? If you're an explorer going in and looking for something, if you think about those categories specifically, it will help you see the town more clearly.
The rural cultural elements, is that still
our mission statement is to preserve and sustain rural culture. So we had to define what rural culture meant. So it's the combination of those 8 elements.
Those 8 elements, which then led to or came from the 8 wonders of Kansas.
It led to the 8 instead of 7 wonders of Kansas.
Let's talk about the 8 wonders of Kansas real quick, because they're kind of the knock it out of the park.
Right.
The big attractions, concepts, events sometimes.
On the 8 wonders, but we decided to let the public be involved in, you know, choosing the top things about Kansas in each of those eight categories. A committee selected 24 finalists, and then 100,000 people voted throughout the length of the contest to decide the top eight in each of those categories. And I think they're a really good representation about each of those categories throughout Kansas, big cities, small cities. It's like a starter kit of things to see and do in Kansas, and then you go from there.
You can get down and dig and research and find the nitty-gritty stuff. Well, we've run out of time. I told you it would go fast. I appreciate you coming on. I really love your and Wendy's passion for what you're doing. I mean, to me, it's like Marco Scudero. I mean, I like it when people are passionate about what they're doing, because it's just, I like that story. I love mm-hmm. talking to you about why you do what you do mm-hmm. because of the passion that's there. So I would, on the website, on CodyTalks.com, on the link, I've got a link to the Kansas Sampler Facebook page, as well as a link to Marcy on Twitter. I would kind of challenge you, if you're out there listening and aren't involved already in this kind of stuff, give it a shot. And if you're sitting there thinking you don't want to know any more about Kansas culture, just go at it, because it's something that would be interesting and fun to do, because it really will if you dive into this stuff and maybe join the Explorers Club. Again, if you're not in Kansas, try this stuff out where you're at, because there's a whole bunch of incredibly interesting stories, attractions, and events right around you that aren't necessarily running TV ads and putting up billboards.
Good way to say it.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to call it quits, and we'll be back next week. Same ridiculously early time, same channel. Thanks for listening to Cody Talks.
Don't matter if you ain't left or right, if you bleed red or blue. You better listen up, friends, cause we got a show for you. So come on, come on, come on, it's time for Cody Talks. Dialogue. So rise up, shout out, it's time for your voice to be heard. So come on, come on, come on, it's time for Cody Talks.
Don't forget and tell your friends, Cody Talks is on every Sunday morning at 7 a.m. on 94.7 KSKU in Central Kansas and live worldwide on CodyTalks.com. See you next week.
Sunrise is brought to you by Geico. It's easy to save 15% or more on car insurance with Geico. Go to geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. The only hard part? Figuring out which way is easier.
Sunrise. Hi, I'm Kevin Peterson. Welcome to the last weekend of October. Come